You're listening to Cattails.
You're listening to Cattails, and I'm Cat. Del Brougham has performance in his blood. He began playing guitar at the tender age of 11 and formed dynamic hard rock band Stray whilst he was still at school. In a career now spanning an incredible six decades, Del has rubbed shoulders with many of the greats, toured with Iron Maiden, and is still writing, recording and performing fresh and exciting music. The only original member still with the band, the man of a million riffs, lets the music do the talking as we chat about the challenges of putting on COVID-compliant gigs, the gifts of songwriting, why his latest album is possibly his best work to date, and all about White Feathers. This is the one with Del Brougham.
Nice to hear from you anyway, thank you.
No, it's lovely to speak to you. Thank you for agreeing to speak to me. I mean, it's a long time since I saw you, actually. I did meet you at Cambridge Rock Festival, but this is many years ago. So you are probably distant memory as I slid past you very quickly.
lovely.
Oh, so how are you doing anyway?
I'm okay for a mature citizen, actually. all a bit strange with this lockdown stuff because it suddenly occurred. Well, it occurred to me the other day. I mean, it was we were in the middle of a tour which was going really well, and obviously because of what happened, it all ground to a halt beginning of March, and it was only a little while after that I suddenly realised, you know, this is. Not only was it the first time I'd actually stopped playing since I did my first performance when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
First pay performance when I was 14, and I playing rhythm guitar for my brother's group.
That's incredible.
But that's another story. and also the other thing about it is because none of us know what's going to happen next week, next month, you know. It's the first time I've actually been able to not be able to do anything proactive about getting another show in. You know, myself and my tour manager, who between the two of us, we kind of try and organise everything. You know, you can reach out to promoters and things, but even the promoters don't know what they're doing.
I know.
But other plus side of it is I've not had to worry about the geography, about planning where all the gigs are going, and if I've got enough money left to pay everybody. So... Yeah, it does have its benefits, and it's times like these where I think, particularly in this business, you kind of get caught in, I don't know, I call it like the hamster wheel. You just keep going on it or keep going on the carousel, you know.
Yeah.
You don't actually stop to think to get off, and then when you're actually forced to get off, you think, you know, you sit back and think, oh,
yeah,
oh. That was what it was all about, wasn't it?
It's odd, isn't it, really? A lot of people are saying exactly the same thing, you know, that, but they've actually enjoyed the break and just going, oh, hold on a second, let me reassess, let me look at different ways of maybe working or, you know, just get down to some writing. So, you know.
Well, in that response, you've covered two things which we're actually doing. As you may know, I'm working quite closely with Simon Rinaldo now.
Yes.
You know, from Pearl and Revolver.
I did see.
And I asked him last year when it got a bit quiet for Pearl and Revolver. We've known each other for a long time, and I've jumped in and played guitar for Pearl and Revolver as a guest kind of thing, not in the band. And likewise, when I had a little solo thing, I was promoting a blues album. I asked him to come and play the key parts that I played on the album. And we just got to be really good friends and found we had a very like mind, you know, particularly on things musical, but, you know, even just social. And I think a lot of people forget that is a very important thing. You've all got to get on because, you know, you spend, as we did, you know, as I say, I asked him if he would sort of join Stray because we had the tour starting in September. It was so successful. It started again in January.
Mm.
And we had lots of shows for this year, you know, in not just in this country, but abroad as well. And but of course, worldwide, it all came to a halt. So, but anyway, so going on that thing about it was that it's almost like, oh, it's stopped now. What are we going to do now? Well, we were going to make an album if we could find time. Hey, guess what? We've got time.
Yeah.
So we've been approaching making an album in a completely different way. You know, where I'm a bit old school, and it's nice to get in a studio with all four or five people and record an album. But because of the social distancing thing, we've been doing it almost like you know, colouring. It's like you and me, you know, colouring in a book. And I'll do a few colours. I'll give you the paintbrush, and you can do a few more. So I've been going over, because Simon's got a lovely studio.
So basically,
I've been going in with a song which I have, and I put my, if you like, a guide vocal and a guitar or piano down, and then we get Carl, who's the drummer, to come in and do the drum tracks, and we're building tracks like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, your turn is the baton. But we've got five songs almost completed now. I'm going over to Simon's probably on Monday to start on a new one. So we've got that going, and we've also quite possibly, I was just chatting to my tour manager last night, we've got a live at the 100 Club album, which we did back in November, I think it was October, November last year. And then sort of part two of what you said, doing something else. Well, there's a couple of venues, one venue in particular, which Simon and I did a duo gig last night.
I know, how'd it go?
It went great. It went really good. I mean, it's interesting, actually, because I suppose from my point of view, I didn't think people would be that interested in any of my stories of rock and roll sort of thing.
Oh, you're wrong, aren't you?
Well, quite clearly. I mean, the Cavern at Raines Park, the chap there, Noel, he's been running it, and he's been in the music business for a long, long time. And from the word go, he was right on top of the social distancing thing. Yeah. I mean, his venue holds about 200. So he thought, well, okay, I can't have bands in. It's not financially viable for either party.
Yeah.
If I limited it to, and I think he got people in to work out what he could have in there. And he said, well, let's do some like little intimate things. So my tour manager, Paul, who's got the company Monstrous Child, which they kind of represent me and the band, said to him, well, look, Del has done these acoustic things, but Simon and I did an online thing. He said, how about if Del comes down with Simon, they play some songs, you know, from the solo career, from the band career, and whatever else, you know, I fancy chucking in. Do a little QA with the, you know, the fans. That sounds so Ponzi, doesn't it?
No, it doesn't.
I'll rephrase that. With my fan, singular, and play some songs and just tell some stories. And anyhow, they put the thing up on, I don't know, just social media and in his venue, and sold out virtually straight away. I mean, I know it sounds so glamorous. I mean, it was only 50 people, but what was really good, I mean, I know this sounds a bit silly, but we realised last night that it wasn't like people come along just because the place was open and I fancy a beer. They had to actually pay to get into that one, and most of his things he has in there are free entry.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the people who came along, they came there to hear the songs and the stories. So, it ended up being a great night.
Brilliant.
To answer your first question, the audience was really, really good, and
I've already seen that people on Facebook have been congratulating you on how good a night it was. So it must have been. I obviously missed it, you know, and I've got to go to the next one, because it sounds like you were telling lots of great stories.
Well, I was having a go. That is my problem. As you found in this first 5 or 10 minutes of chatting to me, you'll ask me something. Can I go off on a tangent?
That's fine by me.
so I've always got plenty to talk about. There you go. anything else, sir?
was that the first time you'd actually done a gig like that, where you've actually done that intimate audience bit? Because obviously it's the usual stand up and do the performance, but the telling of the stories, is that a new thing for you?
Well, I've always done that because it's me.
Yeah.
But perhaps not in as great a detail. I always, if I can, I mean, I suppose I've been doing the solo acoustic things on and off since about 2004, when my first solo album came out. Mm. And I actually found that, I don't know, I suppose it was a natural thing, but I actually did find on doing it that people were quite interested in, perhaps if I had an interesting story to tell about the next song I was going to sing or play or how it was recorded or whatever, they added a little bit more to it. Yeah. rather than the old style of, thank you very much. Well, this one's called so-so. 1, 2, 3, 4, and off you go. Nothing, you know. And I thought, well, I'll try and give them a little bit more. And it seemed to have worked okay. And I do that when the band play with Stray. You know, I tend to not just say, well, this song's called. I might say something about it or, you know, just sort of, or whatever nonsense pops into my head at the time. Simon and I asked Simon if he'd accompany me to do some of the songs I hadn't perhaps done before, which would sound better with extra instrumentation, but yeah. Although obviously with the social distancing, not always able to do it with the band. So Paul Newcomb is my tour manager. He said to me, well, why don't we try some doing like an evening with, so people are aware, or hopefully aware, that they're getting more than just the songs. So I mean, that was kind of toe in the water last night.
You're gonna do some more Robin, then bit of a formula that works. So
yeah, that's right. Well, it's kind of okay, we'll go for plan B, because we had a few shows left for the year, and then some got cancelled, and we decided to, okay, well, listen, there's no point in mucking around, we'll cancel those for the rest of the year. With the new album coming out, and some of the shows have been rescheduled for about March, hopefully, if they all come off. Mm-hmm. We have got a big festival in January as well, and a lot of the shows we were due to do, festivals particularly, I'd say most of the festivals that we were booked to do this year, which can't happen, they've transferred everything to next year. So we haven't lost them, but we've lost a year, as it were, you know.
Yeah.
Which was a shame, because the band name started to gather momentum a little bit. You know, we had all the old Stray albums were re-released on box sets and things. Mm. And they all started selling well. And then my solo album, White Feather, came out, and that got some of the best reviews I've ever had. So that was good. So I was actually quite chuffed, because when we actually got to do the tour, I think, to be perfectly honest with you, and I'm not a big head, I'm just stating fact. I think there were some places who took the gig but weren't particularly, they didn't actually think they were going to get an awful lot of people, just because, yeah. Not just with my band, but I think generally speaking, it seems to be hard to get bums on seats these days, or people just to get into a venue. Well, I'm pleased to say quite a few of the shows actually sold out when they didn't expect to.
Fabulous.
And when we actually got back to the stables in Milton Keynes, which was, I've been doing it for years, and this time it sold out on the night, which was great. And I had that was the other thing. We had another show booked for the stables November this year, and I spoke to Alison Young, who's the social secretary there, who books all the acts. I said to her, you know, what do you think is going to happen with the show? You know, do you want to postpone it? She said, well, actually, she said, I was going to call you, because we're cancelling all the shows because they've had, I don't know, whatever body it is comes in and ascertain how many people you can have. And I think the stables hold something like 456 seats, I think it is, and plus all the standing. And obviously, when any artist plays there, your deal is how many bums you can get on a seat, you know, and then profits are divided accordingly, whatever your deal is. Yeah. Well, it worked out on the best possible thing we could get in there. We could only get, I think it was 101 people in out of, you know, almost 500. I could only take 101 people legally. But the other thing was, it's not financially not viable. I mean, you could probably do like a little thing that Simon and I did last night, but it would look a bit strange in a big theatre.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, which actually made the final decision for the stables, was, if you remember, in the stables, the foyer area and the bar are virtually the same.
That's right, corridor
as you go in.
Yeah.
They were told, well, you know, you can have 101 people in the auditorium, but you can only have 40 people in the bar or foyer.
Oh, no. Would you have to stagger the break or something?
For a start, they'd have to sort of really monitor people coming in.
Yeah.
no, stop now, we've got enough in. And then they only have a 20 to 25 minute break in the middle. So so 60 of you got to stay in there while the other 40 go and get their drink.
Oh, that's mad, isn't it?
So that was the reason that one is, you know, what's happening with the stables. But it's pretty well mirrored what a lot of the theatres and venues around the country are like now, what they have to put up with. So going back to last night's one, he's managed to find a way of keeping music live, even if it's slightly different to what he's had before. And of course, me being me, I turned up and I was slightly different to what you had before.
So everyone's
a winner.
Everyone's a winner. Win-win.
Yeah.
But, you know, sometimes good things come out of all this, don't they, that makes you think differently and challenges the way it's been done before, and new solutions are found.
I think you're right. I think you're right about that. I mean, it's not ideal, but, I mean, you know, things have to change, you know, because otherwise there will be nothing. And you have to make do with what you've got and just hope that things will get better in the end, you know. But like I say, at the moment, nobody knows what's happening, you know, tomorrow, next week. All things can change.
I know, it's a moving target, really, isn't it? But, you know, at least you've been doing your music, haven't you, in terms of actually writing new stuff, albeit in a tag team way. Has the sound ended up different because of that?
The sound, I think, is yes. I mean, I'm not the kind of person who writes songs, they're not contrived, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm not the kind of person, I find it very difficult, and I have done, sit down and try and write something as a structure. The best songs, I find, and it's very difficult to explain this, but they're the songs that come out of the air, virtually. You know, you don't, where did that come from?
Little gift.
Yeah, but exactly what I think it is. It's like a gift. And, I, you know, and sometimes it sounds, I don't like saying that because it sounds, you know, you're trying to be a bit special, a bit precious. But
no, I don't think so. I think that's
what,
exactly what
that
it is.
That's what happens with me. I mean, a perfect example of that was, isn't exclusive for you. I wrote a song about a fortnight ago, Dust in Your Pockets, it's called. And I don't know where it came from. And it was about 10:30, 20 to 11 at night. And all of a sudden, it just came from absolutely nowhere. I picked the guitar up, and I started playing it, and I realised I had the words as well. Don't know where they come from. It must have been beamed from another planet or something. But I'm not exaggerating. The words just came out.
Wow.
And it took, I mean, it wasn't a computer. It took me as long to write it with my pen and paper as it did they were coming out.
Blimey.
And it was done in about 20 minutes. And
crikey.
I couldn't wait to play it to the lads. And then sort of in the cold light of day next day, I thought myself, I hope it's not rubbish.
Yeah.
and they came back and said to me, that song is fantastic. It's one of the best you've ever written. But it's those things that happen.
Amazing.
I also think, but you know, just generally speaking, with the other, that's one song, and there's about five others that I've written that we've been recording. It's different in two ways, and it goes kind of like hand in glove, really. I noticed not only was Simon new to the band that we had, we got a new bass player in, another local Milton Keynes lad called Colin Kempster, and he's added something different.
Yeah.
So I've also drafted in Pete Dyer playing second guitar and second vocal.
Wow.
And he was in the band in the late 70s.
Yeah.
So he's come back in. So we've got a touch of the, if you like, originality there.
Mm.
Carl Randall has been playing drums with me now for, must be about nearly 15 years, with all the various sort of bands that I've been involved with. But so we've got Simon bringing something in with him.
Yeah.
You know, maybe a little bit of Pearl and Revolver. And also playing some of the stuff, funnily enough, that he doesn't play within, if you like, the confines of Pearl and Revolver. He can stretch out a little bit more because, you know, he's kind of like the main instrument with them.
Yeah.
He's also, you know, with Colin, everyone's brought something to the table.
Yeah.
Not that they've actually written anything. So what it's done for me is, as the writer, think, oh, hang on, we can do that.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on, I can do that. I can get that coat out of the wardrobe. I can put that one on.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I get that.
We started recording things, and it's a much heavier, rockier sound, but it doesn't But I mean, this sounds a bit calculated as well. But I also wanted to make the songs catchy. I think most of my songs and the Stray songs are quite catchy. You can normally pick up on them fairly quickly. Jokingly, I was saying I think I'd like to. I'm calling it the Glasgow album. Mm-hmm. And I said, "What are you talking about, Glasgow?" I said, "Because funnily enough, I don't know if you saw it. I think it must have been about 6-7 weeks ago." Because there wasn't a Glastonbury, they put highlights of former Glastonburys.
Yeah.
Well, I noticed that every band that was successful on there, even the unknown ones, they got the big crowd with them because they were presenting a song that you could actually grab.
Yes.
You know, you can grab the hook, you grab the chorus, and you're in straight away.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's kind of, I think in my subconscious, I was thinking, I'm going to try and write songs that, forgive me for saying so, that could be anthems. Yeah. So hopefully, it's an album of, hopefully an album of singles, mm-hmm. which, and bearing in mind, you know, a gentleman my age, I was brought up on bands like the Beatles, who always wrote a single, always wrote, they didn't write some bad songs after all, really, when you're all said and done.
And, pretty good.
You know, Motown, and Motown, I would love Motown, and it was all about the songs.
Yeah.
And now we can go back full circle to doing the acoustic thing that I've been doing. It's all about the songs because I believe if you can play the song as it was written, just on the acoustic guitar or piano, you can play it in any way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I think some bands can't always necessarily do their songs live stripped down because, you know, some of them are calculated. They're, you know, written around a riff or something, you know, so it hasn't... It's like the riff's first and the song's last.
Yeah.
But with me, it's always the song has to come first. Otherwise, we're not going anywhere, you know.
Well, that's at the end of the day, that's your product, isn't it? And that's the bit that is the heart of everything that you're doing. So,
and hopefully, it's identifiable.
Yeah.
For you. Yeah. This is the other thing. When you've recorded so many, and you just when you think, oh, that's the one. Then somebody else comes to a gig and say, oh, that's my favourite song. And, oh, yeah, that was all right, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So there are, you know, once again, because there's so many of them and as you say, the longevity of it all,
yeah.
It goes in different stages. I mean, I've got kind of a personal little Stray favourite, I guess, mm-hmm. which was on the very first album we recorded. And I think it was the first song we actually recorded for the album, which is a song called Time Machine. I listened to it back. I mean, different people have said to me over the years, as some other acts have done, oh, you should re-record that one. And I listened to it. I think, well, why would I want to re-record it? Because sometimes you record something and magic happens. It's like you record atmosphere. I don't know how it's done. You know, someone sprinkles a little bit of magic dust and I wouldn't touch it again because it sounds special. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to Cat's Tales. Estelle Brumham here from the band Stray. Enjoy the show because she's got some wonderful tunes coming up.
Yeah, because if you look back at history, the ones that remain or stand the test of time, as it were, are the ones that really have that certain element. It's either the hook, isn't it, or the chorus gets you, or some part of the melody that is so memorable that it stays with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I'm a sucker for it.
Well, it sounds like you're getting all these nice little gifts given to you somewhere from wherever they're coming from, the universe or your brain or who knows.
I think some people, you know, and it's not just music, it could be in any walk of life, you know, some people are good at some things and just naturally it comes to them, you know. I scratch my head that sometimes when somebody's doing something and I can't, how the hell they do that? But, you know, and I've had those people have the reverse conversation with me. How did you do that? You know, well, for me, it was easy.
Yeah.
A chap putting a car back together, that was easy for him. For me, I wouldn't know what the hell I was doing.
Exactly.
You know?
It's only ever easy if you know how to do it, isn't it? So.
Dead easy.
I know exactly what you're meaning. So was it really good to get back on stage then, you know, the first time for all these months, and there you are? I mean, how did it feel? Must have been wonderful.
It was honestly wonderful. It was great. And like I said earlier on, you know, knowing that, you know, in that particular venue they had actually paid to come and see you, which is always, you know, it made it special. Because, and not only that, it was really the first of that type of gig I'd done as well. But I'm glad I actually did it with somebody rather than on my own, you know, because it was, although it's not the band, it's like, it's that camaraderie that, and I think,
it's nice
and I think,
to share.
I mean, Colin, who's our bass player, he actually said to me, you know, as much as he loves the music, he does miss that camaraderie of going out. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, even if we got to the venue and didn't play a note, it would be disappointing. But in our tour bus and staying in hotels and things, we've had a real blast with this new lineup. We've had so many laughs, you know, that face aching moments, you know, yeah. And we all got on so well. And I think we've all found, having played in different bands, I think we've all felt at this moment in time, we've never actually been in a band collectively where everyone's got on so well and had so many laughs.
Oh, that's part of it, though, isn't it? You've got to get on together, haven't you? It's like a little family at the end of the day, isn't it?
It very much is. It very much is. I only had a conversation with a inverted commas fan the other day. Said to me, you know, we've been coming to see you for however many years it was, and he said, I love coming to your gigs. He said, because we meet so many other fans who've been following you for some time. And it's like a stray family. Oh. In fact, at different times, we've had groups of them come along and they start chanting, Stray Army, Stray Army. You know, it's almost like a football crowd. But there is something else, you know, and I've been going with the band name for so long, you know, we've had people come up and tell you, you know, oh, we met at one of your gigs, or I decided to take my now wife to one of your shows, and we've been together ever since. You know, we've been together 40 years or something. And different people tell me different stories, you know, about my dad. I had a couple recently, actually, and none of us are getting any younger, but one chap in particular, his dad was a huge fan, and he was due to come and see the show we were going to be doing in Minehead earlier in the year, and he got killed on his motorbike. Oh. And the son phoned me up, and he really would love to have been there. He's followed you everywhere, but it's on a happier note. It's nice. It's quite humbling to think you've been almost like part of the wallpaper of somebody's life, as well as just being, you know, a throwaway piece of music or a gig somewhere. You've actually meant, your songs or whatever have meant so much to people, and that's the other thing. A lot of my songs are about. Are about things. I don't try to get political particularly, but it's things that perhaps people can relate to, or just even like a fictional story which might sort of tickle the old buds a little bit, you know. But
I know exactly what you mean. But no, it's lovely to be able to influence or have some influence on people's lives, isn't it? And that's what you're able to do with your music, and that's so special. It's so special.
Well, it is, particularly as that was probably the last thing on my mind when I started playing a guitar. I mean, I started playing a guitar when I was about 11 or 12 years old. And almost immediately, I would say, obviously, like everybody else, you kind of try and copy what you're hearing. Yeah. But virtually straight away, I'd written the song. One of the first things I did was write a song. So I think that was always in me to start with. And when I very first formed the band really, I wanted to play music, but I was, even as like a 14, 15 year old, I wanted to use it as a tool to write my songs.
Right.
And I think it's always been there. But as you say, I never even considered when I started how it would affect other people. I suppose it's very much a self-centred, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
And then as time goes on, you get talking to people, you create or develop a fan base, and you get these compliments come back from people. It is a bit mind-blowing, actually, that you've meant so much. But then I think back at music that means a lot to me as well, and you have to sort of slap yourself around the head a bit sometimes, say, well, hang on a minute. You've got songs that are special to you for some reason, or take you back in time somewhere, you know. So
yeah.
I guess it follows. You just don't always realise it.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't take it for granted.
No, you're right. Don't take it for granted at all. And what I've really enjoyed listening to you is saying how that journey has developed. And, you know, you mentioned earlier about White Feather being, you know, one of your best albums, or considered now one of your best albums.
Yeah.
I mean, why do you think that's considered that now? Or what's happened? What's changed? You know, or... why?
I honestly don't know. It's really, with that album, there was lots of things I needed to get off my chest musically. There's a couple of songs on the album. Two of them were, they go back nearly sort of 50 years to 1968 when I wrote these two songs. One song I wrote at the time, because as about 17 year old as I was then, No, I was younger than that then, in fact. But I was writing, I was actually writing a children's book.
Okay.
That's what I was writing about, which never got finished and never got published because the band became too busy. You know, we got our first recording contract and publishing deal in 1970. By 1969, we were, and it continued for many, many years after that, being probably one of the busiest bands on the road in the UK. So I never had time to do anything. And Genevieve, this one particular song was called Genevieve, which was the female lead character in the book I was writing.
Right.
So I had the song. Stray never actually got around to recording it because we had so many songs, as was the other song which I recorded on the White Feather album, another song called Life, which Stray actually did play in the set. But we had so many songs that when it actually got to record the first album, that one didn't get included.
Oh.
And of course, as time rolled on, we wrote more songs, more, you know, different ones. So loads got left on the back burner. So they were two songs I really believed in, and I just kept them for ages and ages. And I worked with Jamie Masters at Echo Studios, other side of Buckingham. And I knew as soon as I started working with him, he was on the same sort of mindset as me of how the thing should sound. And I wanted the song Life to be a little bit Beatly, I am hands up, sort of. It was written around 1968, so I wanted it to sound like it was maybe something from that era. You know, it could have been on Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys or Sergeant Pepper or something like that. You know, I wanted to get that feel, that colour. And Jamie was the man who helped me do that.
That's all I want to know. I'm thanking you, you know you do. The things you do to me make me say I love you.
Del Brumham here from the band Stray. Welcome to Cat's Tales. The album itself was written really after my oldest daughter passed away in 2016. And she'd been fighting a battle with cancer for a while. And
so sorry to hear that.
It's funny actually, because it was difficult to talk about at first, but now I can talk about it, you know, in the show last night, you know, it was mentioned about it. But it's interesting because with White Feather, she actually went to live in Australia, and she did quite well for herself out there. She didn't want to come home, met a young man and got married out there.
Oh.
And he sort of, and she fought this for maybe about 7 or 8 years. She had breast cancer, had a single mastectomy, then had a double mastectomy. This is over a period of time. But then it actually spread to every organ in the body, basically. And I had a phone call from Jay, my son-in-law. He said, "Hey, Del," he said, I think you better come over, because I don't think it's going to be too long." So got a flight, got over there, and I was with her when she passed away. You know, I managed to be there, and that's all in the wrong order, really.
Oh,
it was quite moving. You know, I sort of my daughter's next door neighbour. He said, "Here, Dale, take my guitar, go and play her some songs." So I took the acoustic guitar in, and I sat in the room with her playing her songs, you know, songs I knew she liked to hear and all that. And that was it.
That's absolutely beautiful. You know, it's very sad, but it's also beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But the weird thing, the thing about the White Feather thing was that I was never, I'm pretty much, I suppose, an ordinary bloke, in as much as, you know, I'll believe something if I see it.
Mm.
And I'd always heard these stories about, oh, somebody's passed away and a feather comes down, somebody's passed away and there's a robin in the back garden or a butterfly and all that sort of thing. I thought, well, yeah, of course, yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. People are kind of willing that to, you know, as peace of mind, which is great, nothing wrong with that. But it was really, really quite odd because after she passed away, I went to see her best friend, who lived, quite literally, when I say lived in the outback in Australia, she really did. She was on like a little small holding on her own.
Oh, wow.
And I remember driving up to the gates, walked into the gates, and Sunel, her name was, she came out of the house. And obviously, both emotional, and she gave me a huge hug.
Yeah.
Now, we're in a big, wide open space, not a sign of a bird anywhere, and there's... she and I are hugging. This feather comes down next to us, and she bent down and picked it up, and she said, "Del, that's for you."
Yeah.
That happened. There was a couple of other things happened, but then the other one, which was really weird, was when I came back, I made the album. I had to make a promotional video.
Mm.
So, on the day I'm doing the video, Annie, my partner, is walking out of the house, and she said, "Have you got everything you need?" I said, "Yeah, I'm okay. I'll see you later." And she opened the front door and she went, "Oh, Del." I went, "What?" She went, "Look." And on my doorstep was a white feather. The day I'm going to record White Feather. The producer of the film, or director, he said to me, "Not sure how we're going to do this, whether we're going to do it in black and white or colour, but can you bring another change of clothes, you know, so it'll look good in black and white?" Mm-hmm. So I said to him, I'll just grab a white T-shirt, okay, just white T-shirt and jeans. He said, "Yeah, that's fine, white T-shirt." So I've gone up to my bedroom, I've opened the drawer up, which I know I've got white T-shirts in, put my hand in, picked up a white T-shirt. Didn't think anything more of it. We did a couple of takes of the track, and then he said, "Oh, do you want to change your clothes now, put on the white T-shirt?" I said, "Yeah, okay, I'll put on a white T-shirt." Well, another one of my other little stories, I digress a little bit, is that occasionally I've been wearing my dad's hat. When my dad passed away, yeah. I found his hat.
Oh.
Well, I had the hat, and I put the white feather in the hat.
Yeah.
As, you know, a little bit of a lovely. Little bit of a thing. And so we're doing that, and I put the white T-shirt on, and I looked, and I realised when I put it on that I hadn't just picked up a plain white T-shirt. And the guy who was holding the camera went, and he sort of mouthed, "Look at your T-shirt."
Right.
And my T-shirt that I picked up was a picture. It was a John Lennon T-shirt I had, uh-huh. A white T-shirt. But the picture on the front was John Lennon wearing a hat with a white feather in it. And the line at the bottom was a line similar to the song White Feather.
Oh, my word. You see, how wonderful.
Absolutely bizarre. It was bizarre. It was kind of, try and work that out.
Yeah.
You
know? It's so comforting, though, isn't it? How lovely is that?
Yeah.
That's, you know,
yeah.
She's still there and she's giving you messages of comfort and, you know, and
yeah.
That's just beautiful. So is that where the title came from for the album? Did you name
yeah.
it like that? So, brilliant.
Yeah, that's another song as well, written, what the actual track White Feather is written very, very quickly. And that one just came out of the blue, and I can only hazard a guess where it might have come from, because she was pretty good with words as well.
Oh.
But she's not getting a songwriting credit, because I can't pay her.
You've got to keep it all yourself, especially these hard times, Del.
But the point about it is, I mean, it's not every song is morbid or about anything like that, and I actually haven't hopefully made the song White Feather morbid. It's more like a second person, probably how I was questioning, is it real or not? You know, do you know what I mean? That's the take on that song I wrote. And that's what I often do with songs, try and write them almost as a third person. Wouldn't necessarily be my opinion on some things, but just writing stuff down to, you know, as an opinion.
Yeah.
It could relate to somebody, others it might not.
Yeah.
And likewise, the other songs on the album aren't necessarily that same topic exactly, but they're more about it's funny because I think I've changed as a person, and I think when you lose someone very close to you, you change as a person. And I think there's about 10 or 12 songs on the album, and others are things about life, really. And it, coincidentally, that's the other reason I thought, well, that's a good song to use, the one song I said to you, it's called Life.
Yeah.
So the album, I could have called the album Life, really, but it's called White Feather, and it is about life, really.
White feather's gonna fall. holding on to loved ones and never letting go.
Del Brumham here from the band Stray. I obviously, I'm kind of biased, and I think every musician thinks the thing he did the most recently is the best thing he's ever done. But obviously, it has a little bit more depth to it than just a bunch of songs. Yeah. But the interesting thing was, when we were doing it, some of the music on there is different. It started to become very different to what maybe I thought some fans, and particularly the music press, who can be quite scathing, yeah, would get. And I actually said to Jamie when we were working on it, I said, you know, I've got a funny feeling I'm really going to get panned for this album. So he said, why? So I said, well, lots of journalists, and I don't mean you, Kat, obviously. No. Lots of journalists like to put artists in a category or a bag, as they say. You know, it's very genre orientated. Oh, well, his rock, his blues, his, you know. Yeah. And even the Stray albums were always very varied because, like, once again, it's that Beatle thing again. You know, you listen to a Beatle album and no two songs are exactly the same. But when with this one, I knew at the time, because of what was going on the music scene, they're going to think, oh, Del Brumham, guitarist, yeah, Stray. It's going to be the next Joe Bonamassa. The next, it's going to be a Jimi Hendrix. It's going to be like a big guitar album.
Yeah.
Which is probably what I think probably people might have, in the music business, might have thought I was going to come up with. And it isn't. It's a very melodic album. It's all about songs. there is guitar work in it, but it's not sort of Purple Haze or, you know, a big blues bash. It's all about the song. So the instrumentation, guitars, etc., are there to colour and complement the song. It's all about the song.
Lovely.
And so when it came out, when it was released, I felt, here we go. And it came out on Esoteric Records. To the shock of my life, I got some of the best reviews I've ever had.
Wow.
You know, like 8 out of 10, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10.
Brilliant.
And these were from some serious rock magazines, you know. Yeah. So obviously I was more than happy with that, you know, on a number of levels.
I bet. Yeah, fabulous. Oh, it's been absolutely wonderful speaking. It really has, Dale. It's been so informative, inspirational and uplifting. It's been lovely.
Oh, good. I'm pleased. Thank you ever so much for your time.
Oh, no. Yeah, no, thank you. You take care.
No
Have a
problem.
Lovely day. All right. See you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Cat Tales. To listen again to this and other tales, go to cattales.co.uk.